So I'm going to give everyone a bit more of a challenge in terms of the camera following me around. I can't sit still for too long, largely actually because it's all a bit too exciting. So I work at National Grid and my job is to look at the future of energy. And that's a hugely interesting job at the moment because of the amount of uncertainty. For a business that really is only oriented on pipes and wires, networks, it sort of sounds rather dull, but in order to work out what we're going to do with those pipes and wires and networks, we really need to understand the whole energy system. And that's what my job's all about. And so when we're looking at it, we sort of start with, you know, what's the world going to look like in the future? And, you know, all I've done here is shove up a bunch of pictures, really, of various different technologies. You know, my personal favourites in there are things like the maglev wind turbines or the solar power beamed back to Earth from space. They're all CGI pictures that somebody sat down and created with a computer, and that doesn't take too much trouble in its own right, but they're all well thought out schemes that people somewhere have come up with, often very credible people in universities. So it's quite nice to be in a university where so much attention is paid to this programme, thinking about what the future of energy is going to look like. Because it's only by sort of conceiving of all of these different ideas that we can start to imagine credible pathways to a plausible future. Now, some of those aren't going to come to fruition. And of course, the challenge for me and my job in thinking about networks and what networks will we need is to try and root those out, work out which ones are going to be credible, which ones we are going to have to consider, and in what time frame. So we do that using scenarios. Now, David's already mentioned scenarios, and ours weren't on his list. So hopefully they will be next time. But anyway, we run three scenarios. And the reason we run three scenarios is because there is so much uncertainty over what could happen in the future. So we're looking out to 2050, that's 40 years away. And just to get a bit of a handle on the level of uncertainty, the sort of time we're looking forward in terms of projections is like asking somebody in the reign of Queen Victoria to predict the emergence of nuclear power. Pretty impossible from where they were standing. But 50 years on from Queen Victoria's reign, we had nuclear bombs and the emergence of nuclear power stations being used at a domestic power generation level. So we're using these three scenarios: slow progression, gone green, accelerated growth. And effectively what they're trying to do is capture variability across a range of different variables. We use sort of 34 fundamental different assumptions to drive these scenarios. So if you think there's, you know, 34 we're choosing to use as variables, actually the total list is probably much bigger than that. And so really the realm of possible scenarios is pretty much near infinite. So these aren't forecasts. No matter how much anyone in the press always asks me when I present on these, they are not forecasts. There is none that is more likely than another. They're all as equally likely as unlikely. But the idea is to scope a range that is wide enough to cover plausible future outcomes, but narrow enough to be credible. You don't want to have it so wide that you capture absolutely everything and then can't actually usefully use it to define anything at all. So slow progress, a scenario that is designed to fail to hit UK's renewable and carbon targets. You know, why is it designed to fail? Well, from where we are today, if we did nothing, we would fail. So fundamentally, it is a plausible outcome. So we have to have a scenario that describes that. Gone green, a scenario that hits precisely the targets. It sort of back solves, really. It starts from the answer and works back to today and says, this is the pathway or a pathway that you would need to follow in order to achieve the government targets as set out. And then accelerated growth, one that goes beyond. We hit the targets early. We beat the renewable target, we beat the carbon target. Now, why have one of those? Well, of course, there's a huge amount of effort in the energy industry going into reducing the cost of renewable technologies, particularly at the moment offshore wind. You know, that's, you know, one of the priciest technologies as we stand today, but a huge concerted industry effort going into reducing those prices. And of course, if they achieve that, it is plausible that you might deploy more of those sources than you might otherwise have done. So again, a credible outcome. So I'm just going to take a quick canter through a couple of the high-level charts we have on our scenarios. For those of you who are really interested, if you go to our website or Google National Grid Future Energy Scenarios, you'll find a plethora of data and spreadsheets and booklets that's got all the detail behind these in them. But just to give you a bit of an idea, what we've got here, the three scenarios set out looking at electricity demand. So slow progress at the bottom there, you know, pretty much we're not doing that much energy efficiency. We're not really seeing that much economic growth in this scenario. We're not deploying lots of electric vehicles. We're not deploying lots of heat pumps. We're not deploying lots of solar panels and those sorts of things. So electricity demand, as we see it at the transmission level, pretty much flat. Accelerated growth at the other end. Obviously, we are doing an awful lot more of that sort of thing. So you really see this steep climb in the line, driven by the deployment of those new electricity-hungry devices that we're going to use if we decarbonize heating and transport. Electricity generation, so you know, aiming to meet that demand, trying to do it in the lowest carbon way possible. So the black line, perhaps the most important line on this chart, really trying to drive down the carbon intensity of the power mix. And doing that by weeding out the coal, which is in the top in the orange, reducing the gas, which is there in the yellow, increasing the amount of wind, which is there in the green, the sort of darker green, and then along the bottom you've also got the nuclear making its contribution. Relatively flat, actually, the nuclear, which slightly belies what's going on underneath there, because of course you have got a lot of closures of existing nuclear power stations over this time frame, and a lot of opening of new ones. So whilst there is a lot in the press about new nuclear, is it going to happen, is it going to open, you have got that captured in that line, but net-net you end up only slightly higher by the time you get to 2030. So, is there an electricity crisis? That's sort of a question that kind of sits very large in the mind. And at the beginning of this month, Ofgem published, a rather fat document that really boiled down to this chart. And you know, this chart is setting out how much excess capacity is there in power generation versus the demand that it needs to supply looking forward over time. They're under the Electricity Act reporting this to government. They're only asked to look out 4 years. Over 4 years, the only new power stations you can really credibly build in that time frame are going to be gas power stations. So this is really about trying to understand, do they need to operate a capacity market? Do they need to do something in terms of an intervention to make sure we have enough power? So the red line going through the middle is sort of their base case scenario that they use. And this is sort of based around our Gone Green scenario, give or take a bit around the margins. And they've done some sensitivity studies to either side of that. But what you see is the margins, the excess of generation over demand falling, and falling quite dramatically to sub 5% in their central case. And if we assume that the country's power cables that connect us to France and the Netherlands are exporting, you know, it falls to zero. So just a quick show of hands, who finds that quite scary? Yeah, quite a few people. A few not so bothered. Try charging your iPhone. But this point in time, you know, the Daily Mail just picked on this and said Blackout Britain. And of course, we've probably all seen Blackout Britain headlines on any number of occasions before. So there is a little bit, you sort of read it and go, here we go again. But, you know, it is a plausible outcome. But what's challenging about it is kind of thinking, you know, is it really telling us something useful? Is it telling us that we need to take action? What do we have to believe to find ourselves in that world? And what we have to believe is that no people in the power generation market are actually going to build any power plants over this time frame. And of course, only 3 days earlier, so before the analysis was done, sorry, after the analysis was done, before the announcement was made, you know, we had ESBI announcing another 1 gigawatt of gas-fired power station will be brought to market. So these things are changing all the time. So already this is a chart that is somewhat out of date. But we'd also have to believe, fundamentally, that our electricity markets in Europe were broken if we were going to hit that bottom line. We'd have to believe at the time when we most needed our power that the European countries would not be willing to sell it to us at an extortionate price. So the question for me is not one of, you know, will we have security of that supply over these sort of points of time, but at what price will we have that security? I want to flip to gas, because of course gas is obviously, as David pointed out, a huge part of the power supply and demand mix. And particularly when you look at gas demand actually in our scenarios for that going forward, you know, it's not hard to sort of guess the profiles, really. Accelerated growth at the bottom, where you've got lots of renewables in the mix, and slow progression at the top, where we're pretty much carrying on as we are. But what's interesting for me about those is if you compare the gas demand to the electricity demand on a like-for-like basis in scenarios, in every scenario, gas is more in terms of the amount of energy it will supply. So in accelerated growth, gas demand is 40% more than electricity demand. In slow progression, actually, it's 300% more. So gas is enormously important, and that whole sort of role of gas debate in both power generation and in heating is hugely important for government policy when we think about decarbonisation. So gas supply, where's it all coming from? you know, I was just talking a little bit about the interconnection there to Europe on the electricity side. And, you know, we can get peak capacity, roughly 5% of our peak demand on electricity coming through those connections to Europe. Well, on gas, we're already at 50% import dependency. So again, in terms of thinking about energy security, actually, is it a question of, you know, do we have the molecules, or at what price do we have the molecules? Where are they coming from? Because we're very exposed already to a global market for gas, and increasingly so. By the time we get to 2030, and you've got import dependencies of nearly 80-odd%, we are going to be very much in that global market for gas and a price taker, really, being at the very end of the market. So most important of all, though, people. So in thinking about energy security, actually it's us that are really probably going to make some of the biggest differences, and particularly as we wind our way forward to about 2050, when we have to think, how are we going to interact with energy systems in 2050? And I just want to have a little experiment for a minute. If you all stand up. Right. Who came for the food? No. Okay. Test question. So you may sit down if you know what your total annual energy usage is for heat, transport, and appliances. Very good. That is the best result I've ever had. Three people. Okay, you may sit down if you actively manage your total annual energy use and change your behaviour to minimise it across heat, appliances, and transport. A few more. Again, actually, that's one of the best answers I've had of an audience. And then lastly, you may sit down if in the last 6 months you or the bill payer in your home or abode has switched supplier. So for those of you that are left standing, a few more moments of uncomfortableness here, because you are the lazy people. You are the people who have come to an evening on energy and the future of energy, but basically are taking no interest whatsoever in your energy use. Sit down. But, you know, that is pretty much symptomatic of most of us. And I've done this a few times at conferences. And actually, that is one of the best responses I've had in terms of people who do things actively. This 2050 consumer is going to have to do all of those things very, very actively. And it's quite nice to see a crowd of younger looking lads down this end of the room here, because you guys are the 2050 bill payer. Me, I'm going to be in a home somewhere hoping I make it to the toilet on time. You will be paying the energy bills. You will be paying my energy bill. My behaviour will be driving that bill. You will be paying it. So this is crucially important in terms of getting it right, thinking about the longer term, security of energy supply, security of price. Thank you.